This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, April 19th, 2023. Market's in a holding pattern. We're still just below that 4,200 resistance there in the S&P. And to make Peter happy, I put in the continuous future on the first slide there. You show how that 4,200 area is the resistance here psychologically and by all means, technically as well. It's been the highest since well back into last year. Couple stories. Interesting though. Maybe we need to talk about this a little bit. I'm not sure how much we've introduced this, but it's a pretty narrow rally, Peter. So some mega caps, by definition, although they're not the best performing, are our equity theme baskets there, by definition, since they're so heavily weighted. When you have a 17% gain in the mega caps, it's going to mean that that's holding up a part of the market, and it's been largely what has kept this market, or has the market threatening these resistance levels.
Yeah, exactly, and it's a combination of the yields coming lower. You have had the AI hype around it as well, which is very much concentrated among the mega caps technology stocks. So that's one thing. And then, to some extent, during the banking crisis, there were also safe haven flows. I think that is coming into mega caps. The mega caps segment also has a very high return on invested capital, so there's a quality component to that part of the market as well. So I think there are good reasons for why we're seeing what we see. Semiconductors, luxury, defense, other themes. We've talked about it already year to date. Luxury being a proxy on the Chinese reopening and in the retail sales we got from China the other day, showing very robust gains in that economy. Defense, of course, it's a no-brainer. Will continue to do well, especially the European defense companies. I was looking at it because I went on Danish radio. So if you do the split in our basket between the US defense companies and the European defense companies in that basket since the day before the war started in Ukraine, the European defense stocks are up 85%, whereas the US ones are only up 15%. So you're seeing very clear pattern on spending and where the growth is in that segment. Also, I put in, John, a little bit of a headline here. I think it's important because we're going to talk a little bit about it. I think you also have some comments on the regional banks today. But so this whole AT1 capital market, so the additional tier one capital. So another way of getting permanent capital, which is basically the definition of tier one capital. So one thing is the common equity. We talked about it during the banking crisis. It has been a very, very bad story, especially in Europe. So we got this AT1 capital market, and that was grinding to a state of freeze or hibernation because of what the Swiss government did during the Credit Suisse shotgun wedding with the UBS. And we see a significant risk premium. And I think there has been a lot of uncertainty. So what is the natural risk premium in this market? Is there even accessibility for banks in this market? And we have a Japanese bank that is issuing one of the largest AT1 capital rounds in a long time. Indian, should be said, but still, I think it's a positive news for the banking industry as a whole.
And it was apparently the largest corporate float this year from a corporate in Japan, $1 billion. So it's not chump change. Obviously, a solid bank, but they issued it at 171 basis point spread to JGBs.
Yeah, and then as you rightly said, I mean, a comment before we head on equities, the momentum here is fading a little bit, and I think it very much is due to a repricing of yields. Long term interest rates are moving higher in the U.S., and you're seeing also the pricing of interest rate or Fed cuts later this year is being slowly priced out. It's still looking, the market is still pricing it as a 3 cuts, John, but that's an improvement from 4 cuts or even more just a couple of weeks ago. So things are changing in that, and I think the equities have really rallied dramatically. So the question is how much more room there is. In Europe has come back quite significantly since the banking crisis. You mentioned this to me, John, and we had to put it in. We're getting close to all-time highs in European equities. You can see here this is a weekly 5-year candle chart, and I put in a news item for today, which is partly also showing what is happening in Europe. So on the one hand, you have volume destruction to some degree in Heineken. We'll talk about Just Eat as well, which is also services coming. There's a little bit of weakness coming in Europe on the services side, but other parts of the economy in the consumer discretionary side of things, car sales is rising to a 2-year high in Europe. And a lot of the supply concerns and issues that we have had in that industry is finally going away. And I think this is very positive news for Europe, because there's a lot of employment and a lot of euros tied to this industry.
Yeah, and the pessimists would say, well, yes, we're hitting these all-time highs just about here in the Eurostoxx 50, but we have to remember we've had a heck of a lot of inflation over the last couple of years since the prior highs, or not quite a couple of years, but almost a couple of years since the prior highs. Therefore, in real terms, we're not at a new high, yada, yada. But it is pretty remarkable strength this year, given where we were looking at last fall. Just a brief note, as you mentioned, Peter, on the regional U.S. banks. So as you will note later, the largest of the non-super major banks, U.S. Bancorp, will be reporting. But a couple of things to note here. One of these, Hancock Whitney, was one of the smaller banks, sort of a more typical regional bank that reported yesterday. And they did see a 11% drop basically in 3 weeks, if you look at where the quarter ended on the 31st of March versus when Silicon Valley Bank triggered this sort of scramble here on around about the March, I guess 12th was the other side of that weekend. They saw 11% draw on deposits in just those 3 weeks, and we saw a doubling of their infer was in accessing the liquidity window at the Fed, because their short-term borrowing doubled. So, you see pretty heavy share price there. It was down a couple percent, not a huge shock, but obviously it's been discounted for a reason, and that's not a good development. But with so many banks rolling in today, and especially tomorrow, I don't have the full list, but it was besides the ones that are sort of the somewhat known names, there's something like 8 smaller banks. So we'll get a really good picture, I think, by our Friday podcast, and we can have a roundup of the patterns we are seeing. One thing that I was highlighted on yesterday was that we've talked a bit about U.S. commercial bank deposits falling and how unusual that is. And it's particularly unusual given this time of year, which is into the deadline for paying your taxes in the U.S. So you typically will see a lot of money flowing into checking accounts, getting ready to send those off to the IRS to pay your taxes. And you can see that seasonality a little bit on slide 4 in that commercial bank deposits chart. Or the pretty solid pattern of it building there into this time of the year, into the mid-April timeframe. Tax day was, I believe, yesterday in the U.S., so and this is a couple weeks delayed, this data. So it's just going to be interesting to see that the picture, if this continues to develop after tax day, and it's going the wrong way at net precisely at a time when it's supposed to be building these bank deposits. So pressure on banks, still an open question. But meanwhile, as I show there, the two-year yield, you mentioned how many rate cuts are priced in. Those are rapidly getting priced out for this year at least. And we see the two-year local highs here, close to 4.25%. All right, not much going on in FX, a bit of mean reversion after the dollar pop since late last week. That crazy strong manufacturing retail Empire Manufacturing Survey at the start of the week. U.S. yields rising, providing some support, but because this is not spooking risk sentiment, you just don't get a big dollar bid going into things. The yen still on its back foot, of course, with the rise in yields. And a Kiwi on its back foot as well, ahead of the CPI. Sterling tried to rally a bit this morning on a stronger-than-expected CPI. That CPI core number year-on-year, 6.2%, so stayed unchanged year-on-year from the prior month, rather than falling to the expected 6.0%. Put up a chart there. It's still in a sort of, are we reversing here after trying to take the new highs above 124.50, Sterling versus the dollar there, or are we headed back are we going to continue higher above 125, or we're reversing back into the range? Ole, commodities. We have not a lot going on there in crude market. I'm not sure we're supposed to find the next. I can't find a pulse, if you will.
No, exactly. And I think that's probably the what's quite interesting at this point in time, where we've had this significant production cut from OPEC Plus, that we haven't really had any follow through buying in this market, and I think that just could potentially raise the risk of a short term correction here. Also, just simply that the risk appetite that we talked about seems to be fading, also driven by the short term interest rates pointing to pricing out rate cuts. So what are we looking at? Well, first of all, as I mentioned earlier in the week, we're looking at some of the margins, refinery margins, because you're not putting crude oil into your car, you're putting diesel or gasoline. And so that's really where we need to see whether there is a demand or not. And right now, as you can see on the right-hand side down slide 6, the diesel product prices in both the US and Europe, priced in dollars per barrel, coming down. We're trading at the lowest level in a year. So that's obviously not signaling underlying strength at this point in time. So that just leaves the open question whether that gap at one point can be can and will be closed. I put in WTI chart today. You can see that you can see the break where that's there, where that would start to occur. In Brent, it's below 83.50. That could take it down to 80. So keep a close eye on that. Today, I think the focus is primarily on the stock report from the EIA. API last night reported stock draws across the board. That should be supportive. Underlying, I will also be looking at the production numbers. I'll be looking at the consumer demand, both for gasoline and diesel. They have been going in opposite directions recently. Just generally get a feel for what's the situation look like in the US. But generally, it seems like the tightness or the market is starting to, is at least fading for now. And I think we're also seeing that if you look at how investors have been behaving in some of these major ETFs during the past month, this is a slide just showing some of the major ETFs split into non-usage and usage. That's obviously depending on whether you are around the world you're trading, whether you can trade all ETFs or not. And as you can see, the physical gold or gold demand generally has been very strong this past month. At the same time, broad exposure into commodities has also been picking up. And at the bottom of the pile, we basically find crude oil, both in usage and non-usage. These are basically being sold, and this has basically happened during a month where crude oil prices popped higher. So that's sending also a signal that the market is a bit lukewarm on, or investors are a bit lukewarm on the prospect for further increase at this point in time. Just finally, I just want to point out that the even though we're seeing this fading risk appetite, the backwardation across the commodity index, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, is still pointing higher. That's the red line there on the right-hand side. If we take that gas into account, we're still in a contango broadly, but that's simply because nat gas has a 50-plus contango, which is just weighing down on the whole sector. But if we disregard nat gas, then we have a price-supported backwardation in the market.
Yes. All right. Irony to see that natural gas price so weak, and it will be so key to watch as we progress through the summer and into the fall, especially in Europe, as those prices are discouraging of production. Okay. A couple of massive companies and tone-setting companies, at least for, in the case of ASML, reporting earnings here. Netflix last night, but ASML this morning, Peter. What's going on?
Yeah, the crown jewel of Europe. Shares are down actually 3% on the initial read from ASML, which is a little bit odd because they beat on the Q1 growth margin, and the revenue figures as well beat on Q1, and the estimates for Q2 are also, at least on revenue, guidance is above the current estimates. So, but they have two comments. So the first comment is that they see mixed signals on demand. That is very, very vague. Vague. And what you can say is that they're reporting that they expect 25% revenue growth. Also, that demand will exceed production. But they're still sending out this phrase that they see mixed signals on demand. And I think that combined with comments from the CFO. He says in a statement that China is 20% of the backlog and 8% of system sales, and they're just waiting for the final verdict or decision from the Dutch government on whether to follow through on the I don't know, guidelines or demands from the U.S. government to curb especially systems or lithography machines, the EUV, the extreme ultraviolet machines. Those are the ones that are used to produce very advanced chips, and I would presume that China is scrambling right now to what to do if you know the curbs are being, you know, enacted by the Dutch government, because that will mean that ASML will have to cut China out of the equation there, and obviously that will be a hit to the stock. So I think there's a lot of downside risk tied to that decision. And then just the takeaway. Also here in Europe, reporting a little bit, as I said, I mean, we're seeing a disappointment on organic volume growth in Heineken, so suggesting a little bit of fatigue among European consumers. And then just the takeaway, their Q1 orders as well below estimates, only by 1.5-2%, but still, and then guiding a growth transaction value of -4% to 2%. So I think this is one reflection on one part of the consumer market where people are maybe holding back a little bit. And then another consumer stock, you mentioned it, John, Netflix. They reported after the close there was a great hopes for, you know, a positive surprise. I also highlighted that was potentially the case for Netflix. I think they're doing three very good things to you know, increase the shareholder value. But Initially, the shares were down in extended trading by 12%. They did fully recover. And, you know, the Q1 numbers were bang in line with estimates. They even increased the guidance on free cash flow for the year to at least $3.5 billion. And that's because they're cutting down on their original content production. But then it was the Q2 revenue guidance that really came in lower than expected and spooked investors. But then what happened during the session or the aftermarket trading was that Netflix were out saying they will be rolling out paid sharing models very soon. So they're clamping down on this sharing. But then on the other hand, they say, okay, you are allowed to share a lot of your passwords, but you just need to opt up to a different model where you have more accessibility to share. It will cost you a little bit more, but you need to do that to be in compliance with our rules or our terms of service. So, and I think investors were like, okay, that's very good news because that will increase monetization going forward. Netflix estimates that they have 100 million users that potentially could be paid users that right now are sharing passwords.
Wow. We have the most speculated upon stock in the world out today, Tesla. I assume after the close, Peter. I just saw a Bloomberg headline a minute ago talking about they've cut their prices once again, five plus percent on the Model 3s and Model Ys. And we were talking about this yesterday, these huge drop in the lithium carbonate prices, the purest form, at least one metric that we follow that is traded in China. So take us through what you'll be looking for in that Tesla earnings report.
Yeah, I mean, just yesterday, prices on lithium carbonate, which is a very key chemical, industrial chemical for producing lithium iron batteries. It's a carbonate salt, basically, and the price fell 3% in just one day yesterday. And you can see the price here. This is a 5-year weekly chart. We're down, I think, 65% to 70% from that peak in November, and that's of course the reason why Tesla is cutting prices. And I said to you yesterday, I read a couple of sell side analyst reports on Tesla, and I was shaking my head. They were talking about Tesla's, the risk to the growth margin, and they were making these assumptions about okay, they cut the price so much, so they need this much more efficiency in their factories. And I was just, it's the price of the batteries, of course, that are coming down because that's the strategic objective of CATL, which by the way will be reporting tomorrow. And that's because lithium carbonate prices are coming down, as you said, John. So I don't think Tesla will have difficulties in actually defending. They're not stupid. So I think they will do the price cuts in tandem with falling production costs. So they more or less will maintain that production target they have of around 20% growth margin. What will be key for Tesla is that there was a little bit of disappointment on the Q1 delivery numbers. You can argue that there has been a seasonality pattern over the past 3 years where every Q1, you can see that on the red line there on Tesla. So quarter on quarter, the Q1 figures are always flat and not very impressive, at least in the previous 3 years. And this year it was actually increasing quarter on quarter. So I think relative to past seasonality, I think actually the delivery numbers for Q1 for Tesla was quite good. But it is all about the demand outlook and whether Tesla, will reaffirm or confirm that they are swinging for the 50% growth rate again this year. That will be crucial. It's a very, very high bar to set. But
better hurry up with that Tesla truck and hope that it sells really well.
Yeah, and then of course, I mean, when you look at the little insert I have here with the ramp up in EV deliveries from Tesla, Volkswagen, BMW, and BYD, you can see the charts there. It's going to be super interesting to see whether the other competitors are ramping up or they're following the similar pattern as Tesla, and especially BYD. It looks like they are ready to take over Tesla as the largest battery electric vehicle maker in the world. And then, John, we should mention the U.S. Bank Corp. They're also reporting today, and that's before the market. And
fifth largest bank in the U.S.
It's the fifth largest bank, and I was looking at it. So, but it's often grouped into the regional banks, but can we talk about it being a regional bank when it's that large? It has $520 billion of deposits, and deposits actually grew quarter by quarter in the previous 4 or 5 quarters. So it doesn't look like U.S. Bank Corp is really the problem. And judging from the other banking earnings we've had, I actually suspect U.S. Bank Corp will deliver quite a strong result, to say the least.
Yeah, there could be tone setting, and we'll try to do a roundup again by Friday with all these different banks reporting. Okay, the macro calendar, a little bit more interesting today with a few bits and pieces coming in. The U.S. Treasury doing a 20-year auction. Interesting always to see the demand that far out the curve. Beige book as well, you get some ad hoc anecdotal commentary. Not ad hoc, but anecdotal commentary on how the different Fed regions are are hearing from the people they interview about the state of the economy. A couple of central bank speakers. So after that slightly hot UK CPI number, we have the Bank of England's Catherine Mann out speaking, a Fed speaker as well. But the New Zealand CPI should be very tone-setting for the Kiwi. It's only a quarter every quarter they release the CPI. So it should have impact, especially given that the RBNZ has been priced as sort of the most aggressive end of where the among G10 central banks on where they will be taking rates. Japanese CPI tomorrow, or sorry, not till Friday, and the preliminary manufacturing PMI. And this is where I think it could be interesting on Friday as well. The day before that, on Thursday, we have the second of these regional manufacturing surveys. This one, the Philly Fed, and it's expected at minus 19 versus the previous of minus 24 point something. And so, in other words, another very, very bad reading. And we saw this whiplash turnaround in Empire. If we get a whiplash turnaround in the Philly Fed as well, we start to think that there might be a pattern here. And then there might be a bit more focus and attention on the preliminary U.S. manufacturing PMI, which normally doesn't get much respect. May or may not happen. Again, that's one of those things we highlighted yesterday as something to keep track of. For now, I think interesting to watch the price action as it shapes up, how the market treats the Tesla report after the close, and as well the U.S. Bancorp report before the market opening today. So we'll stay on top of those things and developments and round it up tomorrow in the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.